Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, I hope my last letter has convinced you that the trough of dullness or dryness through which your patient is going at present will not, of itself, give you his soul, but needs to be properly exploited. What forms the exploitation should take, I shall now consider. In the first place, I have always found that the trough periods of the human undulation provide excellent opportunities for all sensual temptations, particularly those of sex. This may surprise you, because, of course, there is more physical energy, and therefore more potential appetite at the peak periods. But you must remember that the powers of resistance are then also at their highest. The health and spirits which you want to use in producing lust can also, alas, be very easily used for work or play or thought or innocuous merriment. The attack has a much better chance of success when the man's whole inner world is drab and cold and empty. And it is also to be noted that the trough sexuality is subtly different in quality from that of the peak, much less likely to lead to the milk and water phenomenon which the humans call being in love, much more easily drawn into perversions, much less contaminated by those generous and imaginative and even spiritual concomitants which often render human sexuality so disappointing. It is the same with other desires of the flesh. You are much more likely to make your man a sound drunkard by pressing drink on him as an anodyne when he is dull and weary than by encouraging him to use it as a means of merriment amongst his friends when he is happy and expansive. Never forget that when we are dealing with any pleasure in its healthy and normal and satisfying form, we are, in a sense, on the enemy's ground. I know we have won many a soul through pleasure. All the same, it is his invention, not ours. He made the pleasures. All our research so far has not enabled us to produce one. All we can do is to encourage the humans to take the pleasures which our enemy has produced at times or in ways or in degrees which he has forbidden. Hence, we always try to work away from the natural condition of any pleasure to that in which it is least natural, least redolent of its maker, and least pleasurable. An ever-increasing craving for an ever-diminishing pleasure is the formula. It is more certain, and it's better style. To get the man's soul and give him nothing in return, that is what really gladdens our father's heart. And the troughs are the time for beginning the process. But there is an even better way of exploiting the trough. I mean, through the patient's own thoughts about it. As always, the first step is to keep knowledge out of his mind. Do not let him suspect the law of undulation. Let him assume that the first ardours of his conversion might have been expected to last and ought to have lasted forever, and that his present dryness is an equally permanent condition. Having once got this misconception well fixed in his head, you may then proceed in various ways. It all depends on whether your man is of the desponding type, who can be tempted to despair, or of the wishful thinking type, who can be assured that all is well. The former type is getting rare amongst the humans. If your patient should happen to belong to it, everything is easy. You have only got to keep him out of the way of experienced Christians, an easy task nowadays, to direct his attention to the appropriate passages in Scripture, and then to set him to work on the desperate design of recovering his old feelings by sheer willpower, and the game is ours. If he is of the more hopeful type, your job is to make him acquiesce in the present low temperature of his spirit and gradually become content with it, persuading himself that it is not so low after all. In a week or two, you will be making him doubt whether the first days of his Christianity were not perhaps a little excessive. Talk to him about moderation in all things. If you can once get him to the point of thinking that religion is all very well up to a point, you can feel quite happy about his soul. A moderated religion is as good for us as no religion at all. And more amusing. Another possibility is that of a direct attack on his faith. When you've caused him to assume that the trough is permanent, can you not persuade him that his religious phase is just going to die away like all his previous phases? Of course, there's no conceivable way of getting by reason from the proposition, I am losing interest in this, to the proposition, this is false. But, as I said before, it's jargon, not reason, you must rely on. The mere word phase will very likely do the trick. I assume that the creature has been through several of them before. They all have. And that he always feels superior and patronizing to the ones he has emerged from. Not because he's really criticized them, but simply because they are in the past. You keep him well fed on hazy ideas of progress and development and the historical point of view, I trust, and give him lots of modern biographies to read. These people in them, they're always emerging from phases, aren't they? So you see the idea? Keep his mind off the plain antithesis between true and false. Nice, shadowy expressions. It was a phase. I've been through all that. And don't forget the blessed word, adolescent. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
Screwtape Letters, podcast letter 9. Just for our audience, we have a website, which is our show site. It's called ScrewtapeLettersPodcast.com. There's some special clips on there that you won't find within these podcasts, and we're going to be adding, as this grows, extra content. There's going to be takeaways that you can get there, and just more things. So go there, subscribe again, ScrewtapeLettersPodcast.com. And let's dig into letter 9. Now, Galen, we talked about how this letter and letter 8, it's almost like a continuance.
Yeah, it's kind of hand in hand for sure. Whereas, so letter number 8, you know, we're talking about the peaks and the troughs, the highs and the lows of life. He says, don't get too excited when your guy's in the lows. That's actually the best time that he might end up getting close to the Lord. But in this letter, he's saying, now, but if you do find your patient in the lows or the troughs, here are some good ways that we can exploit that. So this is kind of the enemy's tactics. And so if you're even in a position where you're in a dark season, a low season, going through a difficult time, this is unpacking what the enemy's tactics are to really exploit that.
Brilliantly put. And he talks again, he uses this term, the law of undulation. And for everyone, if you're just jumping in on this letter, that it's the ups and the downs of life.
And the fact that both happen. It's a natural.
They do. It's natural. That, mm-hmm. See, that's the explanation of it. It's natural, and I think it's God's plan. You see it throughout the Bible. All of the characters within the Bible that you read about, David, he's there. God, why have you forsaken me? Mm-hmm. You're so far from my distress. It's like he's really in a low point at that point in mm-hmm. time. And so that's important. And then they dig in here about how when you're at that low point, again, that exploitation piece, and they say that troughs are especially useful for sensual temptation during mm-hmm. that time, because I think people are trying to escape from the dark moment, from that trough, from their despair or their loneliness or whatever it is, and so they look for that dopamine hit.
Yeah, exactly. Going for the dopamine, going for the serotonin hit. So going for coping, a lot of your coping mechanisms. He talks about alcohol in here. He yep. talks about falling into sex, reading up pornography and things like that. You're going to be a lot more vulnerable to temptation for the things that just bring some type of satisfaction, because it might even be really bad. Everything hurts right now.
Right.
I'm in emotional pain. I'm in distress. I don't see any hope. I just give me anything that can alleviate some pain and bring me a little bit of joy and pleasure. Which he actually goes on to talk about the fact that it's really empty pleasure.
Right. And, yeah. he says that this is the moment that men can be drawn into perversions. I think that's really interesting, because I think if you look at the times, and we all struggle with vices, we all struggle with, you know, Pastor Mark has this saying that the only men who don't struggle with sex are dead men and liars.
Right.
And it's so true.
Spot on, yeah.
And we've all struggled with this as men. And at the lower times, yeah, it's that they're the times that you start to reach for something to make you feel better about yourself. But they don't actually spiral you upwards.
They spiral you downwards.
Right.
Yeah. And he compares in a really interesting way people that fall into sexual sin when they're in low places in life versus high places in life. And I don't know. I'll ask it as a question. I don't even know if I 100% agree with it, but it's almost like when people are in good times and they fall into sexual sin, the sexual sin might actually accidentally lead them into like a happy life and a marriage, you know, maybe a marriage that got off on the wrong foundation. But when you're at a high, you can at least experience sin in sort of in a more pure way. But when you're in the lows, you're more susceptible to what he calls a lot of the unnatural, debased
right.
sexual things. So I think pornography and things like that, people are going to that when they're really tend to be depressed. You're going to be more victim to it. And ultimately, you're going to fall for those things that you're not ever going to get anything in return. He says, to get the man's soul and to give him nothing in return, that's what really gladdens.
Yeah, right.
You know?
and there is that, and people talk about it, that emptiness with loveless sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where he's talking here, and C.S. Lewis does a really great job of saying that through his observations and maybe through encounters he's had, that you don't fall in love with someone in really dark times because you're not in a place to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
You're much more likely to lean toward, because as well, mind's racing at a million miles an hour with this, when you're in a dark place, the idea of being patient for love isn't there, because you want to get out of mm-hmm. where you're at really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And for everyone listening, if you're in that place, this is where you've got to be really careful, because the first things you will be drawn to are quick hit satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to be the road to the peaks and to the good times in life. They are just going to keep you mired in mired in that sin, but mired in those low times as well. You're
right.
Circling the drain.
Yeah, he says that creates an ever-increasing craving for an ever-diminishing pleasure.
Yes.
The craving goes up, but the joy from it just keeps getting lower and lower and lower. The downward drain.
So yeah, he even talks about and uses the term drink as an anodyne, and an anodyne is something that's free from pain. So the idea that you're using something to take away that pain rather than to find a way through it and find a way through those dark moments. And sometimes it's just patience. Sometimes you just have to weather the storm. Like we talked in the last episode about Jesus on the boat, and Jesus is like, you guys are all freaking out in the storm. Be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Be still. And the winds die down and the storm stops. And I think that is it. That's a great way to look at times. And it's helped me that when I've been through dark moments, isn't to look
and woe is me, but is to just say, I've just got to dig myself out of this hole. And it's kind of an interesting term anyway to use, because you're in a hole, how can you dig your way out of it? But hey, you can actually make a ramp on one side of the hole and dig your way out of it. So again, that's the way you've got to get your mind thinking, is how do I get myself out of this situation, rather than how do I wallow in this situation?
You know, something for just a little bit of, I don't know, maybe a little bit of encouragement. This may surprise you, but of course, when you're on the highs, there's more physical energy there for more potential appetite at the peak periods. You must remember that the powers of resistance are then also at their highest. The health and spirit which you use to produce lust can also be used for work or play or thought or innocuous merriment. So he actually has an interesting thought here that I think you can even maybe start to embrace as a remedy to start to maybe get out of the rut and start to get out of from the trough up into a peak season. He talks about what people do with their energy when they're in the peak seasons. So he says, well, don't forget, when your guy's at the peak season, it might be easy to tempt him into sex, but he also has a lot more energy to fight the temptation.
Right.
And he actually gives a little hint of like what healthy life looks like, especially with regards to a lot of the, you know, sexuality and a lot of the merriment and the good things of life. He says, the health and spirits with which you want to use in producing lust, alas, can also be very easily used for work or play or thought or innocuous merriment. In other words, when you're and he's talking in the context more of people when they're in the high season, but even in the low seasons as well, if you can direct your energy, again, when you're in a trough, you don't have as much of it.
Right.
But at least rather than directing the energy you have towards the things that are going to pull you in, start thinking of directing that energy to meaningful work, meaningful play, productive thinking, innocuous merriment. Again, we're expanding our vocabulary in C.S. Lewis, but just like enjoying happy times. Take your energy and try to break the rut, get out of the cycle, and get down a different mental path to direct that energy in a positive way.
It's interesting because I think a lot of people, when they lose jobs or get fired or get laid off, that immediate moment that happens can either set your path towards a huge trough, or it can push you in a positive direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I brought this up because there are life events that happen. It could be the death of someone, you know, having to move your house, losing the house, losing your job. If you can at that point actually set some positive markers, because what your experience is actually change.
Mm-hmm.
It's not death,
sure.
Right? It's just
sure.
Change.
Yeah.
If you can be positive during that, and again, with that whole idea, if you get laid off of a job, and there's a lot of that going on in this economy at the moment, look at it as being an opportunity for change,
mm-hmm.
as a positive moment. And I think if you do that, that puts you in a much better headspace. And what employer out there doesn't want someone who is exciting and positive and uplifting, rather than someone who's desperate and depressed and woe is me.
Right.
So I think that's a brilliant analogy around in that same place, is when you get into those troughs in life and they happen for multiple reasons, find your way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
and recognize the patterns, like, because we all get in our own heads.
Yes.
We all get in those bad thought patterns, and it's like, you have to do something intentional to break the cycle, whether it's a mental pattern or an addiction pattern. Break it, but be intentional about it. I think the point of this episode is to see trough seasons happen. The enemy comes in a very real way. Now that we can see the tactic, do whatever you can do to try to break yourself out of it. And it's not diminishing the fact that we go through hard times. I'm not just telling them to be happy in your dark season, but be intentional about it.
But remember, there was that Oscar-winning movie, It's a Beautiful Life, set in the concentration
mm-hmm.
camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Italian film.
Where they decided mm-hmm. to be happy in that moment. Now, whether, you know, it's probably fiction, because what a horrific place to be.
Sure.
But at the same time, there are stories about Bonhoeffer and a few other
World War II prisoners who chose to be happy through that those moments. And it totally befuddled the guards and everyone else that they were too scared. And they increased the torture and they increased the cruelty. But they just were like, look, this is just the journey and this is my suffering through this. Most people we're talking about here, they're going through minor things. Oh, I crashed my car and I've got to pay $500. Yeah. That's it. Well, you know, and then $500, I'm not diminishing. That's not a lot of money for most people. It is. But it's not a time to be just completely down on yourself. Yeah. It's a time and a moment where I think God's nudging you for change.
Sure.
And I try and look at life like that, and it keeps me positive through the ups and downs.
No, I'm with you. 100%. I've probably at times in life been too much of an optimist and not been realistic. And I think you have to hold two things in balance really well. I think you have to realize bad things happen, and there are bad days. And like, don't. You know, if there's a negative emotion you have to feel or process, go through it and embrace it. Be real.
Yes.
Be really, like, don't just be a cheesy, everything's amazing type of person. I think as you grow in your emotional and spiritual maturity, you have the ability to embrace the negativity, but still choose to be happy.
Yeah.
And I think that's a mark of a good, mature, emotionally wise person. I do believe I'm with you.
You can't be oblivious.
Or you can't be oblivious. No. You gotta live in reality. Yeah. You have to be realistic, but I do think happiness is a choice and you always have the opportunity to be grateful.
Right.
You always have something to be grateful for. And that's even one little thing that will start to rewire your brain. You cannot be like grateful and sorrowful at the same time. The two emotions can't exist at the same time. So start by listing things that you're grateful for. That can snap you out of it.
And the devil absolutely and his minions want you to be negative.
Right.
All day long. I don't think anyone would dispute that, but that's something where they want you in there. Now, it talks about how any pleasure, healthy or satisfying, is God's. And how they're the things that he wants you to embrace. But he also talks about how there's an ever-increasing craving for an ever-decrease in pleasure being the formula that they use.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do to increase your pleasure, knowing it's going to eventually become an ever-decreasing pleasure that's going to get you hooked on more of the worst.
Get more and more of you, and you get less and less of it. Yeah.
Well, I'm even thinking about drug addiction. And you look at it in there, you start with like a little, and then I need more, and now I need more, now I need more, and more, and more, and more, until it overdoses you.
Right.
Or kills you, or puts you in a place where you're just destroyed. And it's that ever-increasing craving for that decrease in pleasure formula.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are smart enough to say, hang on a second, maybe this is one of those, it could be food, right? Because you know, you think drugs, yeah, or drugs may be always wrong, but you know, and then pornography, yeah, always wrong. But then you go food and you're like, really, is it bad that I now eat more food and then more food? But then you become a glutton.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is that side of things where, and I think, again, I think the dark side is very clever the way it finds things within different people's lives that it can amplify for the negative.
100%. 100%. Are any of these things, like you said, some of them good, some of them bad, but are any of these things filling a role in your life to compensate for pain? And you're now leaning on them outside of what they're designed for. Are you leaning on sex, whether it be pornography or sexual relations,
right,
to fill a hole in your life? And now you're not pursuing sex the way God intended. You're pursuing it to fill your pain. You're not pursuing food for the way that God intended it. Now you're eating excessively, right, and unhealthily because you're using it to satisfy your pain as your coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then he moves on to an interesting idea about, and I love this line. This one really hit me. He said, keep the patient out of the way of experienced Christians. And then in a very Monty Python voice, he says, it's not hard to do nowadays.
Of course, this was written, 80 years ago?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. But I think that's an interesting moment because I think when you get involved in a small group or a very engaged church or a men's group or a women's group, all of a sudden you start getting around people with different levels and experience of faith.
Mm-hmm.
and getting advice. And look, and I'll even caveat our advice here is like, we're never going to be 100%. I don't think I'm ever going to be someone who can give someone Christian advice 100%. But I don't think perfection is the goal.
Perfection shouldn't be the goal, but progress is.
Progress towards it, absolutely. Because I always look at my walk with Christ and think, I have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm way, way, way off being able to call myself good.
Right.
You know, and that's the challenge. And I think that's the walk that's really important. But when I find myself around more experienced Christians, more people who understand that relationship with God better. And I think we saw it in an earlier letter where when my grandmother and grandfather died, they asked me, do I want a memento of theirs to keep? And they had a crucifix they hung up above their bed.
Mm.
And I've kept that crucifix. So, and I look at that crucifix, and that was probably above their bed through the Second World War when this was being written.
Wow.
Right? But that's not God. And it talks in an earlier letter that you know, keep people fixated on their things.
Right, and the trinkets.
That God's that, and it isn't God.
Sure.
And I think that was a really interesting moment for me because sometimes in my past, I found myself praying to the crucifix.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, am I praying to... Now I'm thinking, was I praying to God or the crucifix?
Right. Too caught up in the actual symbol and relic, not the God.
There you go. And I think he uses that symbol or relic in that earlier episode. So as a piece of advice for people listening, find yourself people in and around you and don't follow them. Just experience them.
Right. Do life with them.
Thank you.
Find a good life-giving community. Because and where he talks about this, he kind of shifts gears, and he's talking about the fact that not only do you want to keep them away from other experienced Christians, or just talk about people who are just mature in their walk with Jesus, but make him think that, remove from his mind the fact that there is the high and the lows. Because if he remembers that concept, he's going to know that there's a high coming and I'll get through this. So get him to think that this current state is permanent where I'm going to be. Remove the hope that this too will pass. And it's talking to other people that help you remind you of that. That help you get you need to snap out of your own world. You need to snap out of your own head sometimes and go into a small group. We do Tuesday night, Wednesday night, men's groups at the church, round table discussions, or whether it be a home Bible study small group or something like that. Talking to people who are more mature Christians can help you get out of the rut. Remember, okay, hey, a good time is coming. Let's not get stuck in the habits of the low season.
And you get to hear stories of people who have had and been through their own challenges. So you understand it's not just you. I remember Dennis Prager on one of his shows had a great episode where friends of his asked them to go out for dinner, him and his wife. And they went out for dinner and they started pouring out about like the struggles they were having within their marriage. And Dennis opened up about us too. And the moment you realize it's not just you that's suffering or going through a particular struggle, that others do too. And that's what I love about those small groups, is that people will open up and they don't have to get into specifics, but knowing that you own your own business and you're struggling and you're here. And I'm unemployed and not doing well and I'm here. And you go around the room and you see that and you say to yourself, wow, okay, that it is a journey that people have got to get through. Now, C.S. Lewis makes a pivot in here that, and I think he means that as people come out of these troughs, that they start, and if they come out of it without being prayerful, and they come out of it and just certain things happen in their life where they start to move towards a peak, that they start looking at their religion and looking at and saying, was it really a big part of that got me out of that? Was it what got me into it? Maybe I'm a little overzealous with my faith. I talk about Jesus too much. Maybe it was just my whim or something I was just prone to be part of. And he talks about, and I think it's a great concept of, make them think about just religion in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets me thinking of Sunday Christians. He said, I'm religious. I go to church on Sunday. By Sunday afternoon, I can't remember it, but like Sunday morning, I knew how to get
there.
Yeah, right. And for me, you know, I've been there. I've been there as a Sunday Christian and also as a Christian. So I don't even need to go to church. I can just do me.
Mm.
And it's interesting looking back and thinking about those times and not being satisfied and also not getting deeper and thinking about along those concepts of religion in moderation.
Well, I think what he's doing is he's get your patient to think that this state of, you know, the trough is just a permanent thing, and therefore I'm no longer, you know, whatever excitement I had when I first came to faith, get him to just start to get complacent with his faith and just think, well, I mean, my faith must not be alive because I'm stuck in this permanent low state where I'm just in constant suffering. And just get him thinking that, well, I guess the religion is just a smaller piece of my life or something that didn't really matter. Or get him to doubt whether he really, you know,
he
really
believes
had
it all.
He believed it all. Or maybe just move beyond it. And then it's almost like coming to a negative season, being isolated, and then giving up on it, and then walking away from the faith and turning to an attitude of cynicism, where you actually have like judgment and scorn, a feelings of superiority and patronizing people. Oh, well, I went through that. You know, I went through that Jesus thing, and you know, it just didn't work out for me. I guess don't go there.
because I think that the demonic realm wants us, as is pointed out, that he wants us to believe that those troughs are permanent. And that religion isn't going to get you out of it.
Right.
Jesus isn't going to pull you out of it. And for them, it increases despair, which draws you closer to the dark side. Mm-hmm. As we see, going back to temptations and lust and perversions. And away from God. And again, the law of undulation. I think it should be something that should be above in every church and every school.
It's something we should talk
really
about more.
It's huge.
Yeah.
You know, because it really does set you up to understand that life isn't fair. You're going to go through peaks and valleys, and just ride them.
Don't let it get. Don't isolate. Don't let it turn you cynical.
Yep.
Don't let it take your joy is another thing. He talks about that in there. You know, think that I'm just stuck in this forever and now I'm a joyless creature. Don't let it pull your faith. And get around people that can help you get out of it.
Yep.
You know,
and there's some good advice in there. Find yourself a small group. Share your troubles. Share your challenges with people that you can trust, and you'll usually find that in church small groups. And just have that faith to be able to continue that journey with Jesus at your side, knowing that you're not the only one who's ever been through it, and you're not the only one who's ever going to go through it.
Right.
That's it for our Letter 9. Again, ScrewtapeLettersPodcast.com. We'd love to hear you. Subscribe over there, and we'll see you on the next letter.